lacking of return guys. Speedy B finds a seam. Brandon Banks has some room. Look out! Banks near the 50 to the 40. Brandon Banks down near the 20. He's going to score! Touchdown! Oh my goodness!
Gable running away from defenders down the sideline.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Fantasy football this week. We don't usually talk fantasy on here, but Mike and I went up against one another and did a little looking at the score this morning after all the games. And I won. So bow down. You do get two other opportunities to beat me, however. We play again. I looked it up because, you know, I'm thorough, if not anything. And we play again in week 10 and week 17, but the outcome's going to be the same then. I'm just going to steamroll the championship this year, so get used to it.
We play thrice this year?
We play thrice.
Huh. Well, you know, it's still early, so I'm 1-2. You're 3-0, the only undefeated team in the league. But
I'm sorry, say that again?
You're 3-0, the only undefeated team in the league.
That's what I thought.
But once again, still early, and lots of time to get redemption for myself and get that championship.
Well, I will give you a pat on the back for last year. You did climb all the way up to second place and get to that title game. Mm-hmm. You lost, but hey, you know what? Like you said, it's still early. I'll just bask in this early season win streak and the one game lead over you in our unofficial best of three series, which in week 10 I'll take again. And maybe I'll give you the week 17 matchup because I probably should have everything clinched by then anyway. I mean, I'll be 16-0, so not like it's going to matter.
You're going to start your backups?
Yeah. Yeah, I won't start a quarterback. Yeah, nothing but backups. All right, so let's get into the news. Are you ready to do a little ranting and raving?
That's your job, isn't it?
No, my job is to curse.
All right, right. Yeah, I'm ready.
Did you see a series of tweets by Marty York about quarterbacks in CFL?
I did see that.
Do you want me to read them out so that we can have a good laugh at this? Because yes. they're pretty ridiculous. So... York posted a tweet saying that Kevin Glenn is past his prime. Travis Lule is not the same, which, like, what the hell does that even mean? Like, that's vague. Matt Nichols shouldn't be in the CFL, but rookie QB in Edmonton will be very good. I'm assuming he's talking about James Franklin.
He said, he said last year that... what was the backup quarterback in Edmonton that retired this year?
Oh, Pat White.
Pat White. He said that Pat White would be the starter last year, so I just want to throw that in there.
Okay. But the one that you know, struck a nerve with me and probably will strike a nerve with you is he just two simple words, Caleros average. Now, look, I went on record back when Caleros was signed that I wasn't sure if he would be the guy. I wasn't sure if he was good enough to be a starting quarterback or if he had shown enough to be a starting quarterback. He certainly has now. And to say that a guy who, through the first two games of the season, led the league in passing yards and had a 74% completion rate is average is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, it's I think it's just Marty York being Marty York, trying to stir up some stuff. You know, if you don't lots of people don't even know that he's on Twitter, so I'm not too concerned with it, but the statements are pretty ridiculous in my opinion.
Yeah, so, you know, me being the, you know, confrontational jerk that I am, I confronted him about it and I said, "Are you a complete idiot?" And I brought up Glenn throwing for 477 against the Argos, cuz this tweet came out last Monday after we recorded the show, which it seems like always news jumps out. As soon as we're done recording, no matter what day we record, something happens. And it's like, oh, we got to wait a week to talk about this, and it ticks me off. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I brought up that, and I brought up Caleros' completion percentage. And he tweeted back at me, mostly about Caleros, telling me that the Ticats have the best coach in the CFL, but their QB, being Zach, is average and inconsistent. He has one good game, one bad game. I'm not going to disagree with them that the Ticats probably do have the best coach in the CFL. If not the best, they have one of the top two or top three. But Caleros was Austin's hand-picked quarterback. Like, he went out and said, this is the guy that I want, got rid of Burris, and brought this kid in. So this great coach, this best coach in the CFL, picks a QB that's average? How does that make any sense?
Yeah, I guess he's the best coach, but not the best DM. He can't find talent.
Yeah, he's had a hard time finding talent getting the back-to-back Grey Cups.
Yeah.
I know what you said was being sarcastic. Don't.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, like you said, Austin picked this kid. He obviously saw a lot in him, and I think he's just getting better as we go along here. So I'm pretty sure as the season goes on, Marty York will have to eat his words and say that he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league.
He's one of the best quarterbacks in the league right now, not later in the season. And like I said, I was not on the Caleros bandwagon right away, but
neither was I.
He's won me over. Like the kid can play. He can he simply can play football. He wins football games. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, like when he's with Toronto, I don't know what it was about. Like, something about his throwing mechanics kind of bothered me. I don't know if you saw the same thing, but
I know what you mean. Kind of like that hitch in his throw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But. I don't know if that's changed at all. Like, he's changed his throwing mechanics a bit. I think he said he might have worked on that in the off season, but it doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me anymore. I mean, like you said, he has 74% completion rate, and he's just been playing lights out so far. So he can throw any way he wants to if he keeps playing the way he does.
And like, first year as a starting quarterback, and he missed half the season, and he got his team from 1-6 to 9-9, first place in division in a Grey Cup appearance. And he, can't forget this, he tied with Drew Willey for the most 300-yard passing games last year with 6. So if Caleros is average and, you know, good one week, bad the next, is any quarterback in the CFL great then? Aren't they all average? If he was the guy who threw for the most 300-yard games with Drew Willey, that means he threw it more than anybody else, and those guys also, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think it's just Marty York being Marty York, to be honest.
I guess. And even his, like, his comments about Glenn and Lule, like, he brings up that Glenn's, you know, done after he throws for nearly 500 yards in a game, and apparently he's on pace for close to or over 6,000 passing yards on the season. And I just I do not get, like,
I don't know where his logic comes from.
Yeah, exactly. You said it, you know, I was going to stammer and stumble. But yeah, exactly. I don't know where his logic comes from. Same with Lule. Like, okay, sure, Lule didn't look great against Ottawa. But then he goes out against Saskatchewan, throws for 404 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Yeah. Yes, yes, he did.
Like, he sort of wants, don't go, like, because he responded to me with, like, you're talking about 2 games or something. I couldn't find the tweet. I don't really care. He's a jackass anyway. But he said something along the lines of, like, you're basing your opinion off of a handful of games or a couple of games. And he's basing all his opinions on, like, he said Lule wasn't the same after one subpar performance against Ottawa. So, I don't know. You know what? You're right. Should best leave him to the scrap heap. There's a reason he's not employed.
Mm-hmm. Maybe he'll be on the show.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get him on a round table with Chad Owens and Ricky Foley.
Yeah. That'd be interesting.
So last week I did a bit of ranting and raving about the Players of the Week award. I'm going to do it again because, once again, 2 quarterbacks and a wide receiver were chosen out of all those great performances last week. And I still don't understand the logic of the CFL changing the way they do this thing. I don't want to harp on it too much, but, like, until I see, like, a Canadian player or a defensive player getting this, I'm going to bring this up because it's just their idea that they're allowing themselves to pick from a larger swath of players is BS. They're just picking offensive guys, and so far it's been 4 quarterbacks, one of which was the same. It was Trevor Harris both weeks, and 2 wide receivers. Where is this? Where are the defensive players? Where are the Canadian players? Where are the special teams players? Like, how are these guys going to get in there with these quarterbacks throwing these ridiculous numbers and these receivers catching 200 yards a game?
Yeah, it's going to be tough for sure. I can kind of see where you're coming from now. You know, I said calm down last week, but I'm kind of with you now. I mean, we'll see where it goes if it changes a bit, if they pick a couple, you know, defensive players, a special teams player, if a couple of those players jump out and they pick them. But otherwise, you know, you're right, it could just be 2 quarterbacks and a receiver each week.
Well, I could already think this week, SJ Green is going to be one of them. He had like 180 yards.
Yeah.
Travis Lule threw for over 400. He's going to be another one. So that only leaves one spot for a non-quarterback or non-receiver.
And Dressler could be another one.
Darius Bowman had a big game against Ottawa. Yeah. So yeah. If we're just, you know, name it the best quarterback and wide receiver of the week award and just give it to those guys because the other players aren't going to get any recognition.
Yeah.
Chris Randall. Okay, before we move on, Chris Randall had a really good game against Montreal. He had an interception, a handful of tackles, and he was locked down on those last 2 passes that sealed the win for Winnipeg. He is not going to get mentioned at all. That is a performance that a year ago probably would have garnered him Defensive Player of the Week and would have given him extra press. This week, because of, like you said, Dressler and, like I said, Green and Lule and all those guys, you're not even going to hear about how well he played.
He's a linebacker this year, isn't he?
Yeah, I think they moved him over to, linebacker DB.
Yeah, he should get some recognition for sure.
All right, so enough of the garbage for the week. Let's get into the games. We'll start with Edmonton and Ottawa. What'd you think?
I thought that Ottawa came back down to earth a bit. You know, Burris kind of looked like Bat Hank in this one. Threw that early pick, which really put them in a hole, I thought. So, you know, he on the pick, he kind of got pressured a bit, got a little scared, and threw a real dumb one, and that really hurt them.
It was a terrible interception. And yeah. Kevin Glenn gets a lot of junk thrown his way for bad interceptions. And, you know, most of it is is fairly like understandable. Burris does seem to get a little bit of criticism, but he doesn't seem to get it as much as Kevin Glenn does. But that was one of the worst interceptions I've ever. That's up there with Eli Manning threw an interception one time with his left hand in a game. He was trying to escape a sack, and he had the ball in the wrong hand. He just tossed it out there and was picked and returned for a touchdown. Like that interception with Burris, one of the worst I've ever seen a quarterback throw at any level of football. And he's like nearly 20 years into his professional career. He should not be making that throw.
No, he seems to make those mistakes quite a bit. So Ottawa only had 25 yards rushing, which you can't really do any. You can't win like that. I mean, well, unless you're Hamilton, I guess. Yeah, I just want to know if like Ottawa's for real or not. Like they put it, they're 2-0, and now they play Edmonton and really stunk it up. You know, Edmonton's defense looked really good, I thought.
Yeah, what did you think about Matt Nichols?
He looked okay. You know, he didn't look spectacular. His numbers weren't. I think he was 12 of 21. You know, 3 touchdowns.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I wasn't overly impressed with him, but it's weird to say that about a quarterback who threw 3 TDs, where you're just like, it wasn't really all on him. It just looked like Edmonton, just as soon as the ball started rolling downhill, they just, what was it, 29-3 or 7 or something at halftime. Like once they started get rolling, it was game over. It was almost a carbon copy of the Hamilton win over Winnipeg in week 2. It was just once Edmonton started getting everything going, Ottawa just couldn't stop them.
Yeah, it got ugly pretty quick in that one. Yeah, like Nichols, he moved the offense. Like he did his job. He scored some touchdowns, but I expect him to improve as he gets more shots as Riley's injured. So I expect his numbers to improve as the season goes on. I wasn't really high on Nichols. You know, we haven't seen much of him, but you know, he can win me over if he keeps improving.
Well, he's just got to keep throwing the ball to Darius Bowman, and those numbers will look pretty good.
Yeah,
he is just a red black killer, Bowman. Like 5 catches for 120 yards and a touchdown. I think he had 3 TDs in their first meeting last year. He just feasts on that Ottawa secondary.
Yeah, for sure. Edmonton looked like they did last year with the defense, so. You know, there are a lot of high expectations for them just this year, so maybe this is the start of them getting the ball rolling.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how they perform now, because it's a rematch in Ottawa this week.
Yeah.
If they can, maybe not necessarily steamroll them the week, but if they can go to Ottawa and get that win, it'll give me I'll think more highly of Edmonton, because they were coming off a bye, and they were pissed after losing that game to Toronto. And Chris Jones is not a guy who really keeps his emotions in check, so I can sort of understand why they just came out like just frothing at the mouth, and they just dominated in all 3 phases of the game. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, Chris Jones is a cowboy.
Yeah. Did you see the suplex by Deion Lacey on Chris Williams?
That's what I called it, yeah.
Suplex. Yeah, it looks like he gave him the old Brock Lesnar German suplex, and I started laughing.
Yeah, that was pretty interesting. Williams got right back up and got in his face.
Yeah, I tried to put him in a headlock and didn't get a penalty. Like, I was surprised he didn't get a penalty.
I know. Usually you get the penalty for the reacting, but...
Yeah.
But yeah, that was pretty ugly. You really got him up there.
Yeah, he got him pretty high, and then the melee ensued, and it was... Yeah. I guess, you know, Ottawa was frustrated because they were getting their butts kicked, and Edmonton was all pumped because they were just, you know...
Yeah, unnecessary suplex, but...
Yeah, a little bit.
That happens sometimes.
A little bit. I'll agree with that. It was fun to watch, though.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else that stuck out to you about that game, or do you want to move on to Bombers and Owls? It's up to you, buddy.
Yeah, nothing really. Not much else. We can move on.
All right. Let's head over to Winnipeg's tight win over Montreal. What stood out to you in that one?
Well, Cato, again, you know, he looked like a young quarterback early on in that game, throwing 2 picks. But for the rest of the game, I thought he looked pretty good. You know, no touchdown passes, but he moved the ball really well. 317 yards. He was decent percentage, 22 of 31. He utilized SJ Green a lot. So Yeah, not quite the performance of the week before, but I was still impressed with how he bounced back after those two early picks.
Yeah, after those first two picks, I sent out a tweet saying that thud you heard was everyone jumping off the Cato bandwagon. And then, you're right, he started to kind of get rolling after that. And sure, he didn't, like you said, didn't throw any touchdowns, didn't really orchestrate too much in the way of scoring for Montreal. But it seemed like those two picks kind of calmed him down a little bit. He was less erratic. As you said, his completion percentage was really good. I want to dislike this guy for no other reason than everyone is just slurping him right now, but he really does look impressive.
Yeah, for sure. And Sutton helped him out a game again. Another great game from him. Two touchdowns. So
well, one touchdown because that one he scored was not a touchdown. He was not in.
Yeah, he wasn't. I don't know what they were seeing on the replay because they review every touchdown. So I don't know. They were just like, just give it to him. Just give it to him.
Yeah, like, and this is the second week in a row this has happened in Winnipeg. The Brian Brohm touchdown from a week ago against Hamilton, he was down at like the 1.5 yard line, and that ball wasn't in either. I don't know what's going on there. Like, do they can the crew in Toronto that reviews these calls not get the angles in time? Like, I don't know what the problem seems to be.
Yeah, because I agree with both those. Were not touchdowns, so I mean, what's the point of reviewing them if they're just gonna allow touchdowns that aren't?
Yeah, the Sutton one was a little like was way closer than the Brohm one, mm-hmm. because you could maybe argue that the tip of the ball crossed the front of the plane, but based on the angles we saw, which I'm assuming are the ones that the review booth sees, he didn't look into me.
No, not even close.
No, but it was the SJ Green show. For Montreal on offense. He made, I think it was DeMond Washington that was covering him for most of the game. He couldn't cover him. It was six catches for 180 yards. He just dominated.
Yeah, he was great. I thought that the block punt at the end of the half for a touchdown really, turned the game around for Winnipeg. I mean, if they don't give that up, then it could be a totally different game. We'd be talking about a Montreal win, perhaps.
Yeah, and like Winnipeg got a score on special teams with the block punt, and they got a score on defense. Johnny Adams, I think, took it back to the house. So it wasn't a very good offensive performance from Winnipeg. They seemed to do just enough. But why do they not use Paris Cotton more? They get rid of Nick Grigsby last year. For whatever reason, we've all heard, read the stories and all that about why he left. But you let Grigsby walk because you like what you have in Cotton. Cotton was a monster for, a game in like the first game against Saskatchewan and, for a little bit during the Ticats Bombers game. And then they used him a bit in the beginning, and then they seem to just, like, forget that he's there and then don't use him at all.
Yeah, he's a talented back. They definitely need to use him more. I thought that Willie, had a pretty good game. I was a little concerned that he was playing after that horrific hit against Hamilton. I thought that he might be out this week, but he was back in there.
Yeah, I don't understand how he didn't, like, they say he didn't have a concussion. And he wanted to come back into the game against Hamilton.
Yeah.
And they held him out, probably because they were getting their pants beaten off. But, how is that? He gets a helmet hit, and he's lying. It looks like he's out cold. He says he wasn't, but, I've seen some reaction from players following the announcement that he was going to practice and play. That they just, players will lie and say, no, I wasn't unconscious. I knew everything had happened. And, how he was lying motionless on the field. How is that not, how is he not knocked out? I don't understand.
Yeah, I'm not a doctor, obviously, but.
You're not?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, no. I've been calling you Dr. Mike.
I know, I've been lying to you, but.
Oh.
But, yeah, that if that's not a concussion, I don't know what is. I mean, that was just. Just looked horrendous, but yeah, I guess football players lie when they're hurt, so it's hard for me to comprehend like these lawsuits and stuff, because they, it seems like a lot of football players will lie when they're hurt, and like what are the doctors supposed to do if like their patients aren't telling the truth, you know?
Yeah, it would be like, you know, you go to see your cancer specialist doctor and, you know, they ask you if you smoke and you say no, and okay, they believe you. What, like, yeah, it's the same thing. Like if they're going to lie about what their symptoms are, then how can you diagnose them properly?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I don't really have any much more to say on the Montreal Winnipeg game.
Do you guys? No, neither do I. Ready to move on to what was probably the game of the week, Lions and Riders?
Yes.
Another OT classic.
Yeah, game of the week, except there was a shit ton of penalties.
Whoa!
Oh, I know. Now I'm cursing.
there was a lot of penalties, and that first half wasn't very exciting. I think it was 7-6 at halftime or something. But any game that goes to overtime and has a wild last 3 minutes like that game does, you know, it gets elevated to classic status. And there's a lot to take away from this game in the positive, but you're right. There were more than their fair share of penalties. Do you want to rant about the penalties? Is that where you're going with this?
Well, I thought, you know, I think the penalties are up overall. Like, this week there was a lot, but I'm not going to go overboard because I think that's going to calm down as the weeks go on. So it's just a little bit frustrating with a penalty every second or third play. But yeah, like the ending of the game was awesome. So, you know, I'm not going to harp on it too much.
Yeah. Okay, good. Because there was just so much to enjoy about this game. And I don't want the lasting legacy of this contest to be the, you know, ludicrous number of penalties. To stay on penalties just for a second, I'm starting to think that it's the players, not necessarily the referees, who are sort of to blame for this sort of epidemic in penalties. It's a lot of objectionable conduct penalties. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of discipline penalties. You know, it's offsides. Like, people are complaining about these new rules. I'll do some research during the week, and we'll get back to this next week. But I don't think the new rules that they've implemented have been a reason for the spike in penalties. It seems like it's a lot of, you know, offsides, and objectionable conduct penalties seem to be going through the roof.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, yeah, there has been some illegal contact on the receivers, but I don't think it's like a huge chunk of the penalties. Like you said, I think it's a lot of offside procedures, you know, stuff like that needs to be cleaned up. And hopefully it does get cleaned up as we go along here.
Yeah, I'm going to do a bit of a rant about penalties when we get to the Argos Stampeders game, because there was a couple of things in that game that just infuriated me penalty-wise, calls and non-calls the like. So we want to talk about Austin Colley, because there's a guy who, speaking of head injuries, had concussions up the wazoo when he was in the NFL, and, you know, he counts as a national because he was born right here in Hamilton. So he's sort of picked up the CFL game rather quickly. Had 6 catches for 84 yards and a gorgeous long bomb touchdown to get the Lions back in that game in under 3 minutes to go, and he caught a 2-point convert, I believe, on that touchdown. So he's really impressed me so far in his first 2 games in the CFL.
Yeah, I was talking about him last week, I think. So I think that he was a good pickup, and if he can stay healthy, I mean, he can be one of the best Canadian receivers in the league, I think.
Yeah, the only criticism I have, and this is not even about Colley, people need to stop saying that he was Peyton Manning's go-to guy in Indianapolis. At no point in his career was he ever Peyton Manning's number one receiver.
No.
Reggie Wayne was there. Pierre Garçon was there. Colley was a good player in the NFL, don't get me wrong. But calling him a go-to guy, that's your Jerry Rice's, your Randy Moss's, your Marvin Harrison's, your Terrell Owens. Austin Colley was never that guy. He was a solid, dependable receiver, but he was not the go-to guy. So let's quit it with the go-to guy talk.
Yeah, I think is it Rod Black saying that, or the announcers saying that?
It's probably Rod Black, because he doesn't know what he's talking about. But I've just seen it a few times, heard it a few times. Like, stop it.
Yeah, no. he played. He played in the NFL, but he wasn't the number one guy for Peyton Manning. But.
No. So Weston Dressler, coming out of the shadow of Ryan Smith.
Yeah. I mean, he was on pace for 400 yards receiving. He had 100 yards in the first quarter.
Yeah, and he finishes 9 catches, 122, 2 touchdowns, and a 2-point convert. He, I get a lot of grief from people in Saskatchewan and have been for the past few months. It's hard to dislike a player like Weston Dressler. He just goes out there. He plays he's just fun to watch. Period.
Yeah. I guess you might have been cursing me because I screwed you on the fantasy draft when I was supposed to pick him for you. But
I'm 3-0. It doesn't matter who I got, buddy.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, I actually had him in the TSN fantasy league. So I was pretty happy with his performance. You know, I thought that. He cooled off a bit after the first quarter, but still a great game from him. I thought it was interesting that 5 BC receivers had over 50 yards, so that's pretty good. And Arsenal was at 49, so it was pretty damn close to 6.
Wow, spreading the ball around in BC.
Yep. Harris had a good game, rushing and receiving, so I've never been a huge Andrew Harris fan.
Really?
No. I don't know. I think he's slightly overrated, but
I've always maybe it's not necessarily he's not the best back in the league. I never would have said that, but
no.
There's something about the way he plays that I've always enjoyed watching him play.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but he's a good player. Don't get me wrong, and he can have big games. But I think that he's kind of, as Marty York would say, a little bit inconsistent.
He's average?
Yeah, he's average.
That's the new insult du jour. Oh, he's just average.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see here. Glenn had another good game. 23-29, 271 yards. 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. But, the Riders are 0-3 now.
Yep.
But I think that they'll turn it around with Glenn. I think that Glenn looks pretty comfortable in that offense, and he's going to have another good regular season, and the Riders will be all right.
They seem like their offense seems to be not the problem.
No.
I know that was some pretty poor way to word it. My English not so good. But it doesn't seem like the issue is with the offense. Like that 1-2 punch at running back with Jerome Messam and Anthony Allen. I got the numbers here. Give me 1 second. Messam had 8 carries for 85 yards, and Allen had 10 for 69 and a touchdown. Like, they can run the football. Like you said, Glenn's played really well. Jamel Richardson, holy crap, comes off the scrap heap, and he had 2 catches, only 2 catches, but 77 yards. Like, and he's put together a pretty darn good season so far. So the defense is oddly the problem in Saskatchewan.
Yeah,
and they have a defensive-minded head coach, and yet the defense is what's causing them to lose these ball games.
Yeah, I was actually listening to a scrum that Chamberlain did, and I think that they're having trouble with these new defensive rules where they can't maul the receivers, because he was saying last year that we just play man-to-man and let the defensive backs maul the receivers and do their thing, and they can't do that anymore, and I think they're having a tough time adjusting.
And didn't they just go out and sign Jeff Tisdale, who was released by Montreal because he couldn't adapt to the new rules?
Oh, did they? I didn't see that.
I thought a couple of days ago, I thought I saw that they were, either they did or they're bringing him in or something along those lines. And yeah, and he was let go of Montreal because he couldn't figure out how to, not maul receivers. So I don't know if that's really going to work.
Yeah, that would be an interesting pickup if they did do that. They need to improve on the defensive side. If they improve on the defense, I think they'll be fine. I thought that it was interesting that a lot of the fans left pretty early in this game. They missed a heck of an ending to the game in overtime. So that's just a lesson that you never leave a CFL game early.
Hey, I almost did the same thing. I was watching, obviously, that game didn't end with overtime until close to 1:30 in the morning. And just before, it was a 3-minute warning, I figure, okay, I'll watch BC's last drive. If they're stopped, I'm turning the game off and I'm going to bed. And that's when Lule threw the bomb to Colley.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, I got to stay up. And then I'm watching, it's like, okay, if Saskatchewan gets this first down on third and inches, I can turn the game off. What happens? They get stuffed. A kicker from BC kicks a 55-yard field goal. I'm like, oh, great, we're going overtime, so I'm staying up some more. And then, yeah, like, I'm obviously glad I stayed up. Great game, but, man, sometimes you just want to get to sleep. It's 1:30 in the morning here in Eastern Canada. It's time to get some sleep.
Yeah, I was, I got to admit that I wasn't expecting Leone, I think his name is, to hit that 55-yarder. So
longest field goal in BC Lions history.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That. So, yeah, good on him. I mean, he's new in the league and making a name for himself. So. Well,
and it also sort of gives credence to the Lions releasing Paul McCallum. Paul McCallum cannot kick 55-yard field goals. So it kind of makes sense as to why. Now, looking at it going, okay, now I kind of see why they let McCallum go, because they saw what they had in this kid.
Yeah, you know, eventually, you know, I mean, McCallum's 45 years old. Eventually they have to let, you know, move on. So I think that was a good decision on their part too.
Yeah. Before we move on, I want to tag back up. You sort of, okay, you didn't say that, but you said you can kind of see Saskatchewan turning things around. So I decided to pull up their schedule. Yeah. So they got a rematch with BC this week in Regina. That's, you know, Saskatchewan's lost two at home. I can't see them losing three. But after that, they host Hamilton. Then they go to Edmonton, Toronto. Then they have Calgary. Then they're in Ottawa. And then it's back-to-back with Winnipeg. I don't see a lot of winnable games in that schedule. Hamilton doesn't normally play well in Saskatchewan, so that could be a win. You know, Ottawa, you know, that could be a W and maybe the Winnipeg ones. But, you know, like, it's very possible that, you know, after the Labor Day and Banjo Bowl matchups, that this Saskatchewan team has two or three wins. And if they're that far down, they might not turn this around.
Yeah, that's a tough schedule. But you never know. Like, it's just so hard to predict in the CFL who's going to win from week to week. So
for sure. I actually, as when we made our season predictions, I very famously put Saskatchewan at 7-11 and missing the playoffs. But I had that with them winning like three or four of their first five games. Cause you know, they played four of their first five at home and they had a back-to-back with BC. They could have started easily at the beginning, when I was looking at the beginning of season, 5-0. And yep. Now I just, unless they can fix that defense, I don't think they are going to be able to turn this around. They're going to score a lot of points, but they're giving up a lot of points too. Like 30 to Winnipeg, 42 to Toronto, 35 to BC. Like I was never enamored with Corey Chamberlain as a defensive coordinator here in Hamilton, but those are Casey Crehan numbers.
Yeah. And, I mean, they've all been close games, but with no credit to the defense, obviously. So, you know, like you said earlier, the offense isn't the problem. If they can get the points down against their defense, then I think they have a shot at turning it around. But if they can't, then it could be a long season in Saskatchewan.
Do you think it's time that we start questioning Corey Chamberlain's job status?
I don't know. I think that. That's a tough one because, you know, he got them that Grey Cup win. I guess they disposed of Cortez pretty quick, even though he was part of that Grey Cup winning team too. But I think that he still has a long leash. I think that even if they do have a bad season this year, he will still have another year to turn it around. And if he has another bad season, then we can start, you know, asking that question, do they get rid of him? So I think he still has a long leash.
Yeah, I just see the way that defense is playing. He is now the guy in control of that defense. He fired Richie Hall, and yeah, I think he has a defensive coordinator, but from all we know, he's actually the one calling the defensive plays, and the defense is really bad, so they're either going to have to force him to take a coordinator who calls plays, or I don't know. I'm starting to see that, you know, that 2013 Grey Cup was more of an outlier than it is sort of a prediction for repeated success. He has not been great as a head coach outside of that one season. And, like, Steve Barato won a Grey Cup as head coach of BC, and it's not like anyone was, you know, knocking down his door to be their head coach afterwards. The Riders loaded up with veterans. They got John Chick back. They brought in G. Roy Simon. They brought in Ricky Foley. Like, they loaded up to win that Grey Cup, and they did, which, you know, kudos to them. It's not, even if you load up on great players, it's not easy to win a championship. But I don't know. It's too early now to say if he should be fired or not. Three games into a season is, like, ridiculously too early. But I think that's something to keep an eye on, because I don't know. He might not be the head coach there next year. If they go, like, 3-15 or 4-14, and it's all on the defense, how do you keep him?
Yeah. Like,
he's already fired the defensive coordinator, so he's already on his second. Actually, I guess it's his third. I don't think Richie Hall was his first choice. I could be wrong, and I'm sure someone out there will correct me, but you only get to throw so many people under the bus before eventually the bus runs over you.
Yeah, that's true. And he got rid of Cortez, too, brought in Chapdelaine. So, I mean, I was kind of shocked that they got rid of Cortez so quickly. I mean, well, you were talking about it in a previous episode that this guy's like an established offensive coordinator for years and years and years. He knows how to run an offense. He may not have been the best head coach when he got an opportunity, but he's established as the offensive coordinator in this league. So, yeah, maybe if they really tank out this year, I could see him maybe getting canned, but I still think he has another year to prove himself. Well, not prove himself, because he already did, I guess, winning a Grey Cup, but I still think that he has a pretty long leash as the Riders head coach.
All right, then. Okay, so let's move on to the final game of the week, the Monday Nighter that happened last night between Toronto and Calgary. What's up with John Cornish? He does not look great to start this season.
No, he's had average numbers every game, you know. Only 56 yards this week. He had a touchdown, yeah, but I don't know. I don't know if it's him or maybe the offensive line isn't as good as it has been. But
or maybe he's a decoy.
Yeah, maybe he's a decoy every game now. But, just average at best so far this season.
Yeah, not to keep bringing it back to our fantasy football league, but I took him in the first round and was ecstatic when he fell to me at number 7, and now I'm kind of, you know, cursing the fact that someone else didn't take him, because he's, like you said, he's been middling. He hasn't had that big game. Like, last night it was 14 carries for 56 yards, and yeah, like you said, he scored a touchdown, but I don't know, he just seems to be something off. I know they mentioned last night that he's a slow starter, like, notoriously, he starts the season slow, but he just doesn't, he looks like he's lost sort of something, and I think I said last week or a week previous, like, maybe Calgary's feeling that Grey Cup hangover, the fire's not in the belly anymore, because they've got the ring, they've, you know, got the monkey off their back. The idea that they're the best team to never win is no longer the issue. So I don't know. It just seems to be something amiss with the way he's playing, because when he's on his game, he's the best running back in the league, like, bar none.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there, but like maybe he does pick it up. Like, I heard that some rumblings that he was saying 2,000 yards is possible. Not the way he's playing.
Not anymore. He'd be lucky to get 1,000 at this pace.
Yeah, exactly. I thought Levi Mitchell kind of had a bounce back game. You know, he kind of, you know, slowed down in the middle of the game, but then kind of picked it up near the end to sustain the win. But he had pretty good numbers. He's 25-34 for 300 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. So I think this is maybe where he turns it around, because it's like Cornish. He looked pretty average the first two games.
When you were giving out those numbers, the first thing that popped in my head, there's our third player of the week. Especially because it's a bounce back performance, like you said.
Yeah.
He hadn't looked great, but he throws for 300 yards and 2 TDs.
Mm-hmm.
Him, Travis Lule, and SJ Green, I'm saying it right now, are going to be the top three, with a possibility of Weston Dressler snaking Mitchell's spot. But those out of those four players, three of those guys will be the players of the week this week.
I think I'm going to go Lule, Dressler, and Bowman for players of the week.
Okay.
I'm not
okay.
Sure Bowman's numbers, but I know that he had a pretty big game. So.
I have his numbers right here. It was I think
Wait. No Dressler. SJ Green.
SJ Green? Yeah, yeah. Bowman was 5 for 120 and a touchdown.
Okay, yeah. So there you go.
Okay, so back to the Stamps game. I don't want to speak for you, but we've had this conversation before about the crying Hawaiian Chad Owens. Did you hear Glenn Suter say that he was having a bad game, but that it wasn't his fault?
I think I did hear that, yes.
He dropped passes that hit him right in the hands. He, you know, he had a fumble. But Chad Owens never fumbles. He's sure-handed and all that other garbage. How is a player having a bad game like that? And yeah, okay, fine. I rag on Owens more than most because I don't like the guy. It was completely his fault that he had a bad game.
Yeah, I mean, the balls that he was throwing, that he was dropping, were catchable. You know, early on in his career in Toronto, he really had trouble with the fumbles. I think that he's improved that a bit over the years, but...
he's got 2 so far this year.
Yeah, so maybe that's back with him. Maybe he's got the dropsies again. So, yeah, a terrible game from Owens. I love to see that. Love to see him cry a bit, so I enjoyed that immensely.
One of my favorite plays in all of football is when he gets tackled on a punt return and he slams the ball down and has his little temper tantrum on the field. Oh, it makes my heart grow 3 sizes. I feel like I feel like the Grinch. I just get so warm and fuzzy inside.
He just doesn't have it on the returns anymore. I don't think I haven't worried about him returning punts for a long time now. I just don't think he's a threat anymore.
No, I agree. I think, you know, he was always a decent player. I think he was always sort of an overrated player. My nickname for him is Overrated Owens. I think people looked at him and, you know, he had that combined yardage record a couple years ago. I think the year he won MOP, gag me that he was ever MOP. Mm. But when a majority of your yards are coming on kickoff returns, I've long said that I'm not impressed by that, because all a bunch of kickoff return yards means is that your team's defense is getting scored on a bunch. There's only one kickoff each game where it doesn't come after a score, either the opening kickoff or the opening kickoff of the second half. Every other kickoff is because your team was scored on, either a touchdown or a field goal. So if you have 1,700 return yards on kickoffs, that doesn't tell me anything. It just tells me that your defense sucks.
Yeah. So we can both agree that Owens is garbage. Garbage.
Yes, garbage. Complete garbage.
Yeah.
Speaking of garbage, I am now going to go on my penalty rant, because there was one call in particular and one non-call that just boiled my blood. The Jeff Fuller illegal interference blocking call, whatever the hell it was.
That was terrible.
That was brutal. That was one of the worst calls I've ever seen.
A big play, too, that could have, you know, changed the game. I mean, that was just so blatantly not a penalty.
They said he was blocking before the ball was thrown. He didn't touch the Argo defender until Rodgers had caught the ball.
Yeah.
He was blocking, as in literally blocking, like what his job was. And it would have set up the Stamps first and goal from the 6. The way they had played at that point, maybe they wouldn't have scored a touchdown, but if they would have scored a touchdown, the game was over. Mm. I was just when the TSN announcers are saying, not even saying, "Oh, I don't know about that one." When they're blatantly saying, "No, that they screwed, they blew that one," you know it's a bad call, because they do not like to rip the refs. Rightfully so. Don't get me wrong. I don't think that they should be ripping the officiating, but when they're saying, "No, they blew that one," you just know it was the wrong call.
Yeah, it negated a great play by Rodgers. I mean, he looked like he was caught, and he danced around and got a huge first down. So I don't know how that happened. The ref was, like, right in the vicinity that threw the penalty, was right in the vicinity of the catch and the so-called illegal block. So, you know, like we were talking about earlier, I don't think that the refs get blamed too much for all the penalties. I think that the players need to take some onus about that, you know, if that's the right word, I'm not sure. But yeah, I think that was just a terrible call, and I have to blame the refs on that one.
Yeah, the other one that ticked me off was a non-offensive pass interference call on Toronto's first touchdown. Kevin Elliott, I believe is the receiver's name.
Mm-hmm.
you watch the replay, and he gives one of the old Deacon Jones head slaps to the Calgary defender. He smacks him in the side of the helmet. The Calgary defender does like three rolls on the ground, and he catches the pass for a touchdown, and they didn't call it. Yeah. And, you know,
supposed
you can't
to go both ways, so you got to call the offensive pass interference if it's there, too. You can't just call the defensive.
Yeah, and you can't challenge offensive pass interference, so there was no recourse for the Stampeders to have that looked at a second time. But, like, that was as blatant of an offensive pass interference call as I've seen that didn't get called. Like, he literally shoved him with his hand on the helmet, slapped him, pushed him down, and then caught the – it was – It gives, you know, all those conspiracy theorists out there who think the league has it out that the Argos have to win. Like, it's things like this that allow these sort of ideas to percolate and stay around. And I don't necessarily buy that there's a conspiracy to make Toronto good, but things like this sure don't help.
Yeah, I don't buy that either, but you're right. I mean, I think that the league understands that, you know, if they're at their... still at the Rogers Center, it doesn't matter. It doesn't seem to matter if the Argos have a good record or not. The fans aren't showing up, so I don't really buy into that. But you're right. Things like that make you scratch your head and wonder.
All right. Anything else you want to talk about in that game, or?
You know, I think that Toronto does a good job at bringing in receivers and talent that we never heard of, and they make a name for themselves in the CFL, like you were talking about Elliott. You know, he had that blatant pass interference, but you know, these guys, these receivers that you haven't heard of are playing pretty well. They have Hazleton that had a big game this week. You know, I like to call him Hazelnut.
Yeah, I call him Vidal Sassoon.
Yeah. That's a good one. But yeah, I know you're not a huge fan of Barker, but he seems to bring in talent that every year that fills spots when they lose players. So I just wanted to throw that in there.
I agree with you. He does seem to do a good job of finding international receivers. Dontrell Inman, John Chiles, to a certain extent, Chad Owens. Like, yep. Owens was brought into the CFL in Montreal and then was cut and then brought into Toronto, but that's another find. And like you said, Elliott and Sassoon or Hazelnut or whatever the hell we want to call him. And Gurley. So yeah, you're you know what? You're right. I do give Jim Barker quite a bit of grief, but yeah, I got to give credit where credit's due. He does seem to be able to find those American receivers.
Yeah, let's move on from the blue team.
All right, let's get into our bowl predictions from last week. You had Rakeem Cato throwing for 350, rushing for 50. And two touchdown passes and a rushing touchdown.
Yeah, no.
Not even close.
A little too bold.
Yeah. Well, I had John Cornish rushing for 150 plus with two rushing TDs and a receiving touchdown. No. Not even close. Bold predictions are meant to be, like, obviously things that everything would have to fall right to happen, but man, oh man, what a...
Yeah, we were way off.
You were a lot closer than I was, because Cato did throw for 317, so you were pretty close on the yards. And he did throw a touchdown. It just so happened to be a Winnipeg touchdown.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, so you were a little bit closer than I was. Maybe I just have too much faith in Cornish, but we're getting killed on these things.
That's all right. They're, you know, when I predict them, I don't really expect them to come true. It's just a little fun thing that we do, so... I can eat crow each week. It's fine.
Crow can be delicious. I've eaten quite a bit of it, so it's not so bad.
You boil it or fry it? In the oven or?
I barbecue.
Okay. Yeah, that's good.
Got a barbecue crow.
Okay.
Only way to eat it.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to the Ticats news then?
Yes.
All right. So
it's a Ticats show, so we should talk about that.
We have spent the first near hour talking about anything other than the Ticats. So let's get into the Ticat portion of this program. Adrian Tracy was fined for his hit on Drew Willey. I'm going to let you take this one because I don't want to yell anymore. Okay, let me start by saying I understand why he was fined.
Yes, I do understand why he's fined. You know, the league has to protect their players. You know, they had. You can't lead with your head and all that, but I don't know. I just, you know, I'll just state the obvious that Willie was going down. Tracy was not meaning to hit him in the head. Willie was just lower than he usually is, and he smacked him. I don't blame the league for fining him, but you know, I don't necessarily agree that he should have been fined, because I think it was just a total fluke accident. So that's pretty much my feelings on that.
Yeah, here's my problem with the fine, is that the CFL set a precedent the week before by saying they weren't going to fine Cleon Lang for the hit on Mike Riley because it was unavoidable and unintentional.
Mm-hmm.
If there's ever a hit, a helmet-to-helmet hit that I have seen that was unavoidable and unintentional, it was Tracy's hit on Willie. That was in no way something that could have been avoided, and no way was something that was intentional. So the CFL sets this precedent that, well, if you don't mean to do it and you can't stop yourself from doing it, we're not going to fine you. Then how does Tracy get fined? And the thing that, like, here's the thing. Willie missed, what, three quarters of a game?
Mm-hmm.
And he started the next week. Mike Riley's going to be out for 3 months.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I understand trying to get, you know, head hits out of the game and all that, but one hit was clearly worse than the other, and it was one that didn't get fined.
Yeah, I just think the CFL is so worried about the headshots that they felt like they had to do something about it. But I just disagree with, you know, fining the guy for a hit that wasn't malicious. Like, it just wasn't meant to be a headshot. So it was just totally accidental, and I wish that they would have held back with the fine.
Well, I am going to keep my eyes peeled for fines this week, because we didn't talk about it in our recap of the Edmonton-Ottawa game, but there was a helmet-to-helmet hit by Ottawa defensive lineman Kalonji Kashama.
Okay.
And I noticed watching the game, he hits Nichols and he headbutts him. Like, he hits him in the chest, like with his chest, and then, like, headbutts him. Like, I don't really know any other way to put it.
Huh.
And it was intentional, and it was deliberate, and it got flagged. But the replay they showed wasn't very good. But I had a conversation with a couple people on Twitter about it, because, you know, I was tweeting during the game, and it's definitely something that needs to be fined, because if Tracy can get fined for his unintentional hit, this one has to get dinged. And I'm really curious to see the fines that come out of this week's action. And if that one's not one of them, oh, you better believe that I'm going to be spitting hot fire next week on the show.
Yeah, I'll have to keep an eye on that. I'm not sure exactly. I watched the game, but I'm not...
It was a split-second thing. Like, I just happened to be, like, really intensely watching it and saw the replay and go, and said to myself, like, did he just headbutt him? And I just happened to, you know, I tweeted out, and I got some people saying, I saw the same thing, but the replay was really quick. Like, it was one of those things where if you didn't see it then, they showed it once, and that was it. And they didn't show it again. But, again, the play got flagged, so I'm hoping that with the play getting flagged, the league will look at it and... You know, I don't want to ever see a player fined, but if, you know, if they're going to fine Adrian Tracy for what he did, this one's got to get dinged.
Yeah, we'll have to keep an eye on that. If they did throw the flag, then the league should take a look at it for sure. So, you know, if Tracy gets fined, then so should Haji Bajubu, or what his name was.
Kalonji Kashama.
Yeah,
I don't know how to pronounce that.
And so
Kashama, I know, is right.
Yeah, so we'll have to keep an eye on that. During this week, see what the fines are.
Yeah, that was really all the Ticat news for the week, because they were on a bye, so they weren't really around. They were all, you know, getting a week away from football. So let's hop into our game preview, shall we?
We shall.
We got this Thursday, just 2 days from now, we got the Ticats heading to Montreal to take on the Alouettes. Hamilton has not won a regular season game in Montreal since 2002.
Whoa, boy.
Yeah, so hopefully we're snapping a streak this week.
I hope so. Jeez, that's ugly.
They did have the playoff win in 2011, yep. But that was not at McGill. That was at the Big O. That was at Olympic Stadium. So I don't know. Like, they could have won. I remember last year's game, the week after Labor Day, I think it was, when they played Montreal. They could have won that when they were up like 21-7 early and somehow found a way to lose that one. It was very disappointing.
Yes, I remember that as well.
Under Ken Austin, though, the Ticats are 2-1 coming off a bye. In 2013, when they only had one bye week, they played Winnipeg and beat them 37-18. And then last year, they came off a bye heading into Labor Day, and then beat the Argos 13-12. And then earlier in the season, their lone loss after bye, they went to Calgary and lost 10-7. We've discussed that Calgary loss during our Calgary game preview, where, you know, the botched field goals and all that, the hard luck Hamilton has there. So the Ticats are 2-1 under Austin after a bye, so hopefully we can make that 3-1.
I'm hoping so. I've been following Drew Edwards when he's at practice, and, you know, given the injury reports, and he's been saying that possible returns on offense, or Grigsby was practicing. I don't know, like, necessarily if he'll start or not, but, you know, Grigsby and Figueroa back in the offense possibly this week, which would be huge for the Ticats.
That's a great way. Let's talk about the offense heading into this game. What do you think they have to do to get this win?
Well, if Grigsby's back, I think that they need to establish the run. I mean, I guess, you know, who's the running back that they have now that's been replacing? His name's been slipping my mind here.
Ray Holly?
Yeah. They haven't been utilizing him at all. So maybe if they get Grigsby back, they'll have a little bit more confidence in the running game. So that would be nice to see, getting the running game back with the Ticats. I'm injured. Excuse me.
You okay over there? You dying?
I'm okay. Don't worry, everybody. I'm interested to see how the offensive line plays. You know, I've been impressed with the offensive line so far this year. I think they've been doing a great job. I'm interested to see what it's like with Figueroa back, because I'm a huge fan of Figueroa, so I want to see how they do with him back in the lineup, if he's back in the lineup.
Yeah, you pretty much touched on everything I had sort of, you know, establish a run game is pretty much, you know, that's going to be the mantra until they finally actually do it. So I am curious if Caleros can keep his impressive early season run going on. Like, I know he's only an average player, but, you know, even average players can do extraordinary things sometimes. So yeah. his we talked about when making fun of that idiot Marty York, he's 74% completion percentage. He looks like he's making his reads a lot crisper and quicker. Maybe that has a lot to do with the line play, like the line's keeping him, giving him that extra half second to find that second or third option. The receivers are all stepping up. Underwood, Tolliver, and Sinkfield have all made impressive plays, and Fantuz has just, you know, he's just been Fantuz. So, and Grant, I can't forget to mention Bakari Grant, has just been, like, everyone on the offense has sort of stepped their game up. And I guess, you know, we're still a little high off that, you know, demolition of Winnipeg a couple weeks ago, but yeah, I'm curious to see what Caleros can do against Montreal's defense, which is pretty good. Let's not shortchange the Owls here. Their defense is pretty darn good.
Yeah, Noel Thorpe always seems to bring it every game. He has a really good defense there. But yeah, I'm looking at the red zone efficiency as well. See if they can, you know, they had trouble in Calgary. They scored some touchdowns in Winnipeg. So I'm looking to see that keep improving, hopefully, you know, keep those touchdowns going, you know, get the momentum, you know, so it's easier as we go along scoring touchdowns. You keep scoring touchdowns, please. So I want to see how that does. And I want to see if the new receivers keep improving, Tolliver and Underwood. I mean, they've had some good games early on in the season. I want to see if they can step up their game to the next level.
Yeah, pretty okay. So, shall we move on to the defense?
No.
You got something else? Oh, shoot it.
I want to see if they continue to increase Banks' offensive play, because they did have a couple, I think, handoffs to him. So I want to see if they can increase his offensive production, you know, get him a couple more plays in the offense, see if we can use his explosiveness. Maybe get him some touchdowns on offense.
Oh, I would like to see that. That sounded creepy. So are you ready to move on to the defense now then?
Yeah, I'm ready now.
Okay, the thing that I am most curious to see is that they got to pick their poison at receiver. That Owls receiving core with Green and Lewis and Jaguar and Stamps, that's pretty good, and Fred Stamps is the guy that I'm sort of keying in on. He's only got 7 catches for 62 yards through the first 3 games of the season, But over his career, he has been a Ticats killer.
Yeah.
I looked it up. He has games of 136, 119, 181, 178, 130, and 204 yards against the Ticats since he broke into the league with the Eskimos. And he's got five TDs in, I believe, a dozen or so games. So it seems like whenever he plays Hamilton, it's go time for Fred Stamps. And after a slow start to the season, I think maybe they could see an increase in production from the former Eskimo star.
Yeah, I was expecting to see more, better games from him rather than Lewis. And Lewis has had some, not great games, but he's been producing. So I still think that Fred Stamps has some years left in him. I think that he's still a great player. So hopefully it's not this game, but I expect him to have a pretty good year. But like you said, he's a Ticat killer, so hope it doesn't happen, but you never know.
Yeah, I also think that the Ticats have to force the Owls into second and long. They need to limit Terrell Sutton's impact on first down. If they can force Cato into, second and seven, second and eight situations, they can bring the house, they can, bring pressure on a quarterback just starting his third game, and hopefully force him to make mistakes. The defense, when they bring heat, they got six interceptions, three of which are returned for touchdowns in their first two games, so sort of taking that out on a young quarterback making only his third career start, I think could be the key to victory for the Ticats.
Yeah, I really like Steinhauer's defense. They've been, they've been confusing quarterbacks for the first two games, with their blitzes in the secondary and linebackers bringing blitzes. So I'm looking to see if the defensive line can just get some pressure, because there hasn't been a lot of pressure from the defensive line so far this year. I know there's been injuries, but I'm looking to see if they can bring it this week and maybe take some pressure off the secondary from blitzing and such. And also, I'm looking at, there could be a couple injuries with Sears and Courtney Steven might be out for this game. So I'm looking at how the secondary adjusts to those injuries, see if they can still have a top-notch game.
Yeah, I'm not, I think one of the guys that was also back at practice this week was Rico Murray. So
yep,
perhaps yep. Murray fills in for Sears. Or at least they can, redo the secondary with Sears in there. And, with Steven out, it creates ratio issues. They dealt with them pretty well against Winnipeg, and that was like a last minute, we have to make a quick decision type of deal. Whereas this week, they'll at least have a week of practice, so maybe we see something similar where they play, a more 3-4 defense with Butler playing mostly linebacker and Daly back there at safety. And if they're allowed to practice that way, maybe they won't have sort of the early game hiccups that they did against Winnipeg.
Yeah, it's, having Butler is so it's just amazing, because he can play the linebacker, he can play safety, he's versatile. So I think that he doesn't get enough credit on the Ticats. I mean, he's such a great player to have for those reasons. So I'm glad that the Butler's on our team.
Yeah, and versatility is something this team has preached since Austin took over. Like Rico Murray, I think, I'm pretty sure he might even still be listed as a linebacker, but at least he came in, he played some linebacker when he first got here, then they moved him to the secondary, and like Steven started here as a safety, and they moved him to out wide at corner. So, having guys that can play multiple positions really helps when you're facing injury issues, which Hamilton has faced the entire time Ken Austin's been head coach. It's just, every year they're playing, 9,000 different guys, and having guys who can play multiple positions, it just helps.
Yeah. Austin always says, if you're on the team, we expect you to play like a starter if you get the chance to be a starter. So, he has confidence in all his players, and they're showing that they can do that with the injuries. So, I think he's a great coach and a great GM, even if Marty Yark doesn't think so, with a great GM.
Yeah. Anything else you're looking for from the defense this week?
Looking if they can confuse the Cato, make him make quick decisions, the decision he doesn't want to make. You saw last week that he threw two picks. Let's hope that he throws another couple picks and helps us win the game.
I would like that very much. So we'll, not much to talk about special teams-wise. I guess the big thing that they have to do in coverage is just contain Stephon Logan. Make sure he doesn't bust a big one.
Yeah, he's getting up there in age. I think he's about 34, but he's impressed me so far this year. He looks like he still has that speed. He's had some, no touchdown returns, but he's had some good returns. So, yeah, we got to lock him down and make sure that he doesn't have an impact on the game.
Yeah, and obviously the other thing is, it's the question we're going to ask every week until we don't have to answer it. Can Brandon Banks score on another return?
Yeah, I'm hoping so. I think he can, but I'm going to think that every week. So
this isn't my bold prediction for the week. That's going to come up next, but I'm going to say he does. I'm saying he's going 3 for 3. He had three against Montreal last year, the one that got called back. He had three in the East Final. He had one called back on a block, but I don't see any reason why he's not dancing in the end zone again on Thursday night.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong. Is Medlock perfect for field goals this year?
I think he's perfect for everything.
Yeah, so I don't remember him missing anything. So I want to see if he continue his perfection this week. So
and as we've seen,
love me some Medlock.
Yeah, and as we've seen, perfection on extra points. Those aren't gimmies anymore, and to have that guy who you know is going to get you that single point every time. That's
huge.
It has been.
There's been a lot of missed extra points, so to have a guy back there that you know is going to make them is just huge.
Yeah. All right. Are you ready to make fools of ourselves again with some bold predictions?
I'm always ready to make a fool of myself.
You want
to
go first?
Yep.
All right. Throw it out there.
I'm going to say Quan Underwood has a huge game. Over 150 yards and 2 touchdowns. That's my bold prediction.
Whoa, that is bold. I look like a wuss compared to yours.
Yeah, that's really bold.
And 2 touchdowns?
Yeah.
Okay, mine is simple. Nick Grigsby is going to rush for over 100 yards. Okay. Now, you might say that's not a very bold prediction. However, I looked it up. The Ticats have just 99 total rush yards through their first 2 games. So, and that's not just running backs. That includes every rushing play. Banks has a couple carries. Caleros has run a few times. So, Jeff Matthews had a 1-yard touchdown run. So, I know it's not, he's going to throw for 900 yards. I'm just saying Grigsby's going to rush for 100, and I think that's bold enough considering how terrible this run offense has been.
Yeah, I think that's bold. In our offense, we're pretty pass happy. So our offense, sound like I'm on the team or something. But
wait, we're not on the team. I got to return all that equipment.
Damn it! But yeah, I think that's pretty bold. The way that their offense runs, it's pretty pass happy. So I'll accept that bold prediction. I won't bully you into any
into picking something else.
Yeah,
you're good. Not that I might actually get this one right.
Hopefully.
Questions. Let's get to those Twitter questions.
Alrighty. One from at USFL Tecmo. Is it too early for the Riders to panic?
Well, we kind of discussed this when we were talking about Corey Chamberlain earlier. Yeah, I think it's too early to panic. I don't think they're going to be very good, but I didn't think they're going to be very good at the beginning of the season. So if you're with me on that, then why would you be panicking now? Because you agreed with me that they wouldn't be very good. So, no, I don't think they should panic. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think it's too early. Every game counts, but, lots of time to turn it around. They've been in a couple close games, so it's not like they've been blown out every game. So, yeah, I take a chill pill if you're in Ryderville, I think. Too early to panic for them. Second question from at Stadneck. Okay, this is kind of a fun one. It's the zombie apocalypse. You can take one CFL player, one CFL on TSN panelist, and one coach or official. Who and why?
Okay, you got to go with this one first because this is I still got to think about this one. I saw this last night, and I've been thinking about it ever since. This is not easy. So if you have your selections, go, and while you're talking, I'll do some thinking while doing a little bit of listening.
Okay, I got Solomon Alamimian because he's just – a crazy man on the field. So I'd like his veracity, his viciousness to protect me because I'm a big wuss. So I got Schultze from the CFL and TSN because he's friggin' huge, and, you know, I don't think he's very forgiving, so I think he'd do well in the zombie apocalypse. And Austin, because he just seems like an angry person on the sidelines. I'm sure he's a nice guy away from football, but, you know, when he's on the sidelines, he seems like he has a temper, so I'd go with him.
All right. I'm going to go in a bit of a different direction here. I'm not going to pick a team, a group of people that will help me survive this thing, because to be quite honest, I think if there was ever some sort of, you know, zombie or machine apocalypse, I'd probably be one of the first ones dead. So I'm going to pick people for each that I think I could have a little fun with for the limited time I have left on Earth. So mm-hmm. for my player, I'm going to take Simone Lawrence, because mm-hmm. I think, you know, he's a fun guy. I think we could, you know, he's also a pretty tough dude, so I think we could maybe fend off some zombies while telling a few jokes. For coach, I'm going to take Jeff Reinbold, again, because he just seems like he'd be a lot of fun to be around, and, you know, he would probably make the best of any bad situation. Like, you know, someone's getting eaten, and he'd be like, no, it's okay, man. Like, it's cool. We'll figure it out. Like, it's not a big deal. I just feel like he'd be a cool guy to have around.
Yep.
And for my TSN person, do we have to limit it to panelists, or can we pick anyone who works for the TSN, CFL and TSN?
Go wide spectrum, pick whoever you want.
All right, I'm going to take Kate McKenna, because, again, I think, you know, she'd be a fun person to have a conversation with. You know, and she, again, she's got Ticats ties, so, yeah, like, that. I'm not going for, like, I know I'm not going to survive this thing. Like, I'm sure, like, you've had this conversation with people before, and I've had these conversations before. I'm not, if there's some sort of world-ending, you know, calamitous event, I'm going to be one of the, I'm a fat dude, I'm older now, I'm not surviving this thing, so I'm making the most of my time on Earth. So I'm taking Lawrence, Kate McKenna, and old Jeff Reinbold.
You need, okay, enough of this fat talk on the podcast, okay? You're just big boned, okay? Okay?
Yeah. Okay. You haven't seen me without a shirt on, so we'll talk about that when you see my man boobs.
Okay. All right, moving on. If you could change any rule in the CFL, what would it be and why?
Okay, I do have one for this. Do you have one?
I had a tough time with this. I think I have one, yes.
Okay, I'll go first then. Incidental pass interference. Accidental pass interference, whatever you want to call it. Mm. It is the stupidest rule in pretty much any sport, and it's the only one. I don't believe it exists in any other form of football, just in the CFL. If guys are running down the field and they get their feet tangled, it shouldn't be a penalty. Period. Like, it just shouldn't. That happens. It guys are running for the ball, and no, I hate whenever I hear that called, and it's one of those ones that I just get rid of it. It's not like there's enough flags in the game to help the offense move the ball. We don't need one where it's like, oh, it was an accident, so let's move them forward. No, the reason why is because it's stupid. So that's why I would get rid of it.
I can dig that. I'm going to get probably a little bit of heat for this, but you might know where I'm going with this. I wouldn't eliminate it necessarily, but the rouge. I'd like to see some tweaks to the rouge, perhaps. You know, I know that you missed a field goal and it's incentive to return it out of the end zone. I'd like to see if you don't return it out of the end zone, maybe you start at the 1 yard line. That would be an interesting tweak.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like when if the ball's punted or field goal or whatever and it goes through the side of the end zone to get a point. I want it to be right through the back of the end zone to get a point. If it goes through the side, then it's no points. So just some slight tweaks to the rules I'd like to see. What do you think about that?
I think when we did a show back in the winter, one of our first shows, we talked about – remember when they came out with the rules – with the new rule, I think we talked about like what rules we would implement, and one of the ones that I talked about was changes to the rouge, because I agree with you. There are certain instances. For one of them, for me, is always if the ball cannot be fielded by the defending team. So, for instance, someone misses a 27-yard field goal, and it goes sailing out the back of the end zone without the defense being able to return it. I don't think you should get a point for that, because as you said, the incentive is, you know, the ball lands in the end zone, you have to get it out. If you don't have an opportunity to get it out, then you know, it gives credence to those people who are saying, oh, you're rewarding failure. So yeah, no, I agree. There should be tweaks. Definitely tweaks to the Rouge play. I'm with you that 100%.
All right. So maybe in the future, the CFL will take a look at the Rouge, maybe tweak it a bit.
They just got to listen to our show and realize that we're, you know, the two foremost experts on Canadian football and just, like, just do what we say and everything will be fine.
Yeah. Always do what we say.
Yeah.
Okay. Last question for us. Who is the most overrated player in the CFL?
Oh, this is a loaded question.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know who I want to say.
Yeah, I do.
We talked about him earlier, so mm-hmm. I want to say Chad Owens because I want to rip into him for being the most undeserving, most outstanding player in the history of the league, or at least since I've been paying attention to the award. But I'm going to say Ricky Foley. Again, mm-hmm. another guy that I just can't stand. But he's a guy who, okay, I'm going to give that he had a couple good years in Saskatchewan. But he's a guy who maintains his job in this league based solely on the fact that he was born in Courtice, Ontario. If he was an American player, he would have been out of the league 3 years ago. You never would have heard his name again. He's only here because he's Canadian. And to me, that makes him the single most overrated player in the game.
Okie dokie. I know this will be like an odd pick, considering that he just came off a really good game, but I'm going to go with Travis Lule.
Okay.
What do you think about that, huh? What do you think about that?
Well, you know, he's a fellow redheaded brother, so I tend to stick up for him, but it's hard not to sort of question where his ranking is among the league's top players after the last couple of years of basically subpar to no playing, so... Yeah, I don't think I'd say him, but I understand why you would.
Yeah, I think he's put on a pedestal a bit in the league. You know, he won that Grey Cup, yeah. He had a pretty good year that year. But I think that I just watch him play, and sometimes he just takes a long time to get going, and sometimes he doesn't get going at all. You know, it seems that a lot of drives stall because he overthrows guys. He smacks his hands and goes off the field like, oh, shucks. I don't know. You know, I'm not saying he's a bad quarterback. I just think that he's put on a little bit too high of a pedestal. So
yeah, I think we need, like, overrated doesn't necessarily mean we think these players are bad.
No.
Chad Owens, I think, is a good player. Ricky Foley, I think these are good players, but I think that they are, you know, propped up as being amongst the best at their position.
Yeah.
And they're not. And maybe is Travis Lule a little bit – is he the Corey Chamberlain of quarterbacks where, you know, that 2011 season where he was MOP and won the Grey Cup, outside of that, he's been, you know, run-of-the-mill. Like, you know, he's a good starting quarterback, but he's never been, aside from that one season, the best in the league. So is it something similar to where we were talking about Chamberlain where it's like, okay, yeah, he won that one Grey Cup, but is that sort of like – an anomaly as opposed to something that we can look at and go, oh, here's where he became great.
Yeah. So, like, if Lule, when, you know, has a great year this year, then I'll gladly eat crow. But as of right now, I think he's a little overrated.
Yeah, so. That seems fair. That's the last one?
That's the last one.
All right. So that's it for this show. Don't forget that you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, or you can listen on our home at 3downnation.com. If you have your questions and want them answered, you can hit Mike up on Twitter. Give him your Twitter handle, buddy.
Mike_Ticats.
Or myself, @JoshSmith_82. You can also feel free to post your questions in the comments section of 3downnation.com on this post that will be going up. I guess I don't have to tell when it's going up because they won't hear it until it goes up. But yeah, so Wednesday seems to be our day, so feel free to throw your questions there. We'll answer as many as we can. Didn't get very many this week. Hopefully we'll get some more in the coming weeks. Maybe because the Ticats were off, we didn't sort of get as many as we had hoped. But I guess that is all for Podski Wee Wee this week. I am Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.